1. The Chase, the CIA. In 2012, it was difficult to avoid seeing images of John McAfee online. By his own design and with the help, hindrance of journalists from Vice, they accidentally revealed his position via the location data published in an image posted on their website, he'd made his escape from Belize via Guatemala Big News. But the McAfee we were seeing in 2012 was visually worlds away from the man we thought we knew, that being the smooth-talking, vaguely hippie-looking bon viveur with sun-kissed highlights and a disarming smile, as opposed to the facially drawn, wide-eyed, and dyed hair version. McAfee's flight from Belize wasn't just a reaction to a state of deepening friction between him and the Belizean government that had been steadily going bad. It was the culmination of a lifetime of behaviours, all of which were informed in some way by the day his abusive, alcoholic father committed suicide while John was an impressionable, rebellious teenager living in Salem, Virginia. McAfee's relationship with his father had been fractious, to say the least, and because young John often bore the brunt of his father's drunken alter ego, a skewed view of authority developed that would last a lifetime. Two questions had burned in me from the moment I first learned that John McAfee was on the lam again in 2018. Where was he, and who or what was he running from? Let's backtrack for a second. Ever since returning to the US from Belize via Guatemala in 2012, McAfee claims to have been chased around the US by a disparate cast of bad guys ranging from US-based heavies contracted by the Belizean government to members of the infamous Sinaloa cartel in Mexico. He also claimed that his wife Janice, a prostitute he met in Miami on his first day back in the US, was in cahoots with at least one of the above and, for several years, via her former pimp, in on the plot to kill or apprehend him. From Miami to Portland, to Tennessee, and finally to North Carolina, McAfee ran for several years with Janice in tow. At one point, having had his cover blown, he hid in an underground parking garage in Portland while his pursuers circled above. On another occasion, a sniper in a field beside a highway in Arizona shot at his pickup truck. What ultimately forced the issue, he says, was when his entourage caught wind of the fact that a grand jury had been convened, indicting him and four members of his 2020 presidential campaign team on tax-related charges, a fact never officially confirmed by the IRS. There was also the small matter of a wrongful death lawsuit relating to his former neighbor in Belize, Gregory Fowle, which the circuit court in Orlando, Florida, was simply refusing to dismiss. On paper, John McAfee definitely had a number of reasons to flee the US in 2018, and he did just that, in typically ostentatious style. He bought a yacht, the Great Mystery, and instead of slipping out to sea under cover of darkness like any other fugitive, he documented the cash sale in an online video post before taking off into international waters, first docking in the Bahamas, then in Havana, Cuba, and finally in the Dominican Republic, where he was arrested in Puerto Plata on what he claimed was a trumped-up firearms-related charge. According to him, the CIA, having first attempted to apprehend him in Nassau, had later flown down to the Dominican Republic to facilitate his deportation back to the US. Instead, after faking a stroke to buy time after having spent 4 days in jail, from where he posted pictures of himself smiling with fellow inmates online, he and Janice were indeed deported, not to the US, but to the UK, his country of birth. That's the abridged version of the reasons John McAfee left the US. More on that later. For now, though, having got to London, the dual UK-US citizen McAfee went completely dark. No tweets, nothing by way of blog entries, just silence. He had disappeared, which wasn't something he was accustomed to doing, given how partial he has always been to self-promotion. Now, in October 2019, here he was, in front of me on a computer screen, from who knows where. Getting him there had been a little fraught, it should be said. His mood, transmitted clearly via his emails, swung between monosyllabic and distant. The formatting was always the same. He never addressed me directly by name, and he never signed off with his. In between, the text was comprised of single sentences with an exaggerated amount of space between. These statements, I assumed, were presented in a way that they'd have maximum impact. "Send me 2 or 3 links to your work if you ever want me to respond again," was one of these statements in our earliest exchanges. Eventually, after a bit of email brinksmanship on both sides, we got there. Visually, even on a video call, John McAfee cuts a confusing figure. For a man of 74 years old, with many drug and alcohol miles on the clock, dating back to his early, pre-McAfee Associates days, he looks surprisingly well. Goatee, broad, healthy smile, tattoo on the chest that reads, "Privacy, Freedom, Technology," and hair that appeared to permanently have some kind of electric charge pulsing through it. On our many calls, he often wore sunglasses, regardless of the time of day, and when he didn't, his eyes had a look that I hadn't exactly bargained for. These weren't the eyes of a madman, not at all. They had instead a potential for great kindness and deep empathy, offset by the knowing glint of a seasoned liver of life. It was, however, his voice that stood out. Although he was British, born to an English mother and US airman father, and grew up in rural Virginia, his speaking voice, which often took on a kind of breathy, quivering, thespian grandiosity, could have been from anywhere in the US. With it, he often attempted to filibuster my direct questions, and in the beginning, I let him, simply because of the novelty value of listening to him. Initially, I enjoyed hearing him eulogize. Pretty soon, though, entertainment had to give way to the actual purpose of our talks, his life story, and to that end, I felt this need to ground myself in some kind of reality with the McAfee myth. To do so, the first thing I had to establish was whether anyone was actually looking for him at all, and if they were, from whom was he running? The way I saw it, if US authorities could pull Saddam Hussein from a hole in the ground in Iraq and track Bin Laden down to some nondescript house in Pakistan, surely they could find and apprehend John McAfee if they really wanted to. Nothing about his situation added up. "At some point, you'll need to come and visit us," he told me on one of our first Skype calls, "but I can't tell you where I am. You'll go to an airport, someone will meet you with a ticket, and you will board a plane. That's all I can tell you." For obvious reasons, this was at best a confusing proposal and absolutely the stuff of spy movies. Although I agreed at the time because I'd have done anything to get the material, it was the only occasion during my several months talking to McAfee that the idea of meeting in person was ever mentioned. Whether it was a trust thing and our daily face-to-face Skype calls served to ease that concern for him, I don't know. But the idea of meeting in person just went away, as many things did during our long and often tangential conversations. Nevertheless, I pressed him on the existence and nature of the imminent threat without ever asking directly where he was. I needed the background to this in-hiding status. "Me, I understand that you're in hiding, but for me to understand you and why you are in the situation you're in, I also need to comprehend why the CIA specifically wants to bring you in at all." John McAfee. "Let's just say that my current relationship with the CIA really isn't very good. They don't want to kill me per se, but I am undoubtedly a nuisance to them, and for a couple of reasons. Firstly, when I was in Cuba, I was in communication with their government about creating a cryptocurrency system that would allow them to avoid US sanctions. There were probably only a handful of people in the world at that time that knew enough about blockchain technology to be able to do that, but I was one of them. This was all over in the newspapers in Cuba and the internet, and that doesn't exactly make any friends in the US, does it? And then there's the issue of tax, for which I haven't filed returns for 10 years. For 8 years, the IRS just turned a blind eye to that. Just like that, they've let many people off filing tax returns and even paying tax. It was only when I went out there and started talking on national stages, at conferences, saying things like, 'I think taxes are legal, therefore if you don't want to pay, here's how you do it,' that I became a problem to them. That's why they convened a grand jury to indict Janice and me, and that's why we left the country." Me. "But where does the CIA fit into this? Why do they even care?" John McAfee. "Once a person leaves America, there is only one organization that can help America bring that person back, and that's the CIA. The FBI can't operate outside America. The military cannot, according to any international law, go around collecting people who don't pay their taxes. That job is left to the CIA, And that's where the dichotomy arises, in my instance, in the sense that some of the people in the CIA are warning me of impending events before they happen. The youngest of these friends of mine is in his 60s. These people are on their way out, but I take action when they tell me things nevertheless. Meanwhile, other divisions within the organization have no choice but to cooperate when someone like the IRS or someone else at a low level in the executive branch says, McAfee is a problem. This guy's outside the country now. He's damaging us politically. Can you help us out? And of course, the CIA will. Me. On a practical level, how do they bring someone like you in? John McAfee. Sometimes they'll outright kidnap people. But most of the time, they do what they've been doing to me, and they'll lean on the governments of other countries to force someone to return to the US. And the CIA can do that because they're embedded in every government, spreading money out like butter on bread wherever they go. The State Department is just a branch of the CIA. All US embassies worldwide have staff working for the CIA. Why? Because that's how they get the CIA into the country. They get given the black passport, and that's a get-out-of-jail card no matter what they do. They could walk into St. Peter's Square, grab a child, and chew off its left arm. Nobody could touch them. The Dominican Republic in 2019 was case in point of how the CIA is embedded in embassies everywhere. It was a perfect setup. After we'd been told by our last port of call, Cuba, that we had to leave the country because the US government had requested that we be returned to America, Cuba said that they hadn't replied to that request and probably wouldn't for a few days. So it was a case of, Mr. McAfee, we'd like you to leave Cuba within 72 hours. We leave, of course, and when we arrive in the Dominican Republic a day and a half later, armed soldiers are lining the dock surrounding the boat. They refuse to let us talk to customs or immigration. Meanwhile, we have our various weapons laid out on the table, unchambered, unloaded, just as normal. Regardless, we were arrested and charged with bringing illegal weapons into the country without declaration. Please God, how could I declare them if I couldn't talk to customs? I knew immediately that this was the CIA, and I also knew that they intended this operation to be so swift that there would be no time for any legal recourse. It was totally illegal and unconstitutional, and had they succeeded, that wouldn't have mattered. I'd have been in jail in the US and never heard from again. However, I'd been through this kind of shit before. Me. You knew what was about to happen? John McAfee. Of course, I knew exactly what was going down. Meanwhile, as we were being driven around, I even identified the CIA agent. When I first spoke with him, I said, "What did you say your name was, sir?" "Jim," he said. "And your surname?" I continued. "It is just Jim." "Do you have a business card then, Jim?" I said. "No," he told me. He may have been presenting himself as some lowly embassy official, but I saw through that mirage. He fitted the profile, ex-military, multiple languages, and as I was looking at him, he was also looking at me in the same fucking way. He knew that I knew. Me. "Are you saying that you recognized each other for what you were?" John McAfee. "Exactly." There was a certain mutual understanding of what the relationship was. He even made a joke about it on the second day. "Why didn't you just call us at the embassy immediately when this happened?" he said, with a knowing look in his eye. As if, I thought to myself. Initially, they didn't even let lawyers talk to us, but as they were transferring us from one police station to another, these two opportunist, ambulance-chasing lawyers grabbed me in the hallway and got me to sign something. They were just doing what lawyers do, looking for potential clients. With lawyer representation, the world changes. Meanwhile, we were moved to another part of the island and thrown in this awful outdoor jail for the night. Me. Did you think there was a way out at that point? John McAfee. There is always a way out, my friend. The next morning, immigration officers came to us and said, "Mr. McAfee, we're not going to punish you for what you have done. Instead, we're just going to send you back to America." "I'd prefer to go to England," I replied, pulling out my British passport. "Sorry, sir, you have to go back to America," came the response. Meanwhile, they had Janice ready to be put on a flight, so I asked my lawyer to file a brief requesting I have my say in court. And thank God it wasn't the weekend, or else we'd have been so fucked. How long will it take to file the brief? I asked the lawyers. It'll take 2 hours, they told me. Me. Sounds like you were backed into a corner. John McAfee. I absolutely was. So I faked a stroke, got taken to the hospital, and bought the time we needed. And ever since then, their pursuit of me continues, whereby they try to find ways to pick me up that don't involve sending a SEAL team in the middle of the night, and instead one that usually involves manufacturing crimes to get me into custody in America, because once you're in custody, you're lost forever, my friend. So my only recourse is to keep running from country to country simply because it takes them time to set something up. I can't let them know where I am, and I know how to do that, and have been doing it successfully for 6 months. McAfee's explanation of his current situation in hiding seemed perfectly plausible, but I didn't quite know whether it was plausible because it was true or because I was simply talking to a master manipulator. I mean, if he could fake a stroke to buy time from the CIA in the Dominican Republic, it stood to reason that he could probably fool me with his fanciful stories of evading non-existent pursuers. What struck me most was how calm he seemed about it all. Regardless, there was no doubt that the man did have a direct relationship with the CIA, which dated back to his own work with the organization, which had begun in the mid-1980s while he was working on top-secret government contracts, after having been identified for the role while he was an employee working for Lockheed Martin, the military contractor. John McAfee. I had to go through an outrageous day-long interrogation process to get my clearance to work on that black program. Have you ever taken drugs? Yes. What drugs? Pretty much everything. Did you ever sell drugs? Yes. What kind? All. Have you ever cheated on your wife? Yes. How many times? As often as I could. That's pretty much how I responded to these questions, and I did so because they already knew the answers. You cannot lie to these people. In the 2 to 3 weeks between when they contact you for an interview and you show up, they are finding everything about you. Who you are, the first time you masturbated. There's nothing they won't know, so you've got to answer truthfully. After the interview, I went back to my job at Lockheed, thinking there was no fucking chance I'd get clearance. I had a female boss and she kept saying, just relax. 2.5 weeks later, I got my clearance. This is just conjecture on my part, but I think I got it because it was pretty clear that nobody was going to be able to blackmail me, given how direct and matter-of-fact I was about all my answers. Getting that security clearance was the biggest shock to me, having openly declared a life of total debauchery. Nevertheless, I worked on one black program for 1.5 years, and I only finished working on it just 1 month before I started McAfee in 1987. I was chosen for 2 reasons. First, I was working for Lockheed Martin at the time, the largest military contractor. In those days, the government always selected people from military contractor backgrounds. Second, they wanted me because I had a unique software talent. By that point, I'd already developed the first ever voice recognition software and sold it. The shit I was working on there was used 3 years later, but it wasn't officially announced for a further 22 years. 22 fucking years! That's how far ahead they worked back then. It's probably 50 years nowadays. Me. What exactly is a CIA black program? Where did all of this start? John McAfee. The atomic bomb, for example, was built inside a black program, meaning that nobody could know about it, including the president. Everyone in a black program must be cleared. Everyone is warned of the dire consequences that await him or her should any information ever be divulged. Those consequences are execution. Me. Who is overseeing this and issuing these directives? John McAfee. You have asked the question of all questions, my friend. In our country, we have presidents, Congress, senators, and so on. We elect these officials, we give them certain powers, and we believe that this is the American government. But let me tell you the truth of this. Behind the American government is the Central Intelligence Agency. The CIA is a necessary evil that we didn't elect, but who now control the flow of information all over the world. The organization was formed in the middle of the last century and was first warned about by President Eisenhower, who once said something to the effect of, "Beware of the CIA and of the military-industrial complex." He said this because he saw where the CIA was headed. Me. What is their actual role? John McAfee. The power of the CIA is based on a tiny principle. That principle is simply called need to know, and this is where the madness begins. These people in the CIA never quit. Unless they get whacked, they are there for life, and they are patriots. The CIA views presidents and administrations as transients, in for 4 or 8 years and then someone else comes along. Meanwhile, the CIA is a constant. So when a new president comes into office and gets the same security clearance as I had, he too is subject to need to know. If he says, "So, do we have evidence of aliens?" he would be told, "Mr. President, sir, I regret to say that you do not have need to know." This is where the CIA became too powerful. They have the ultimate power of veto and as such are answerable to nobody. The other side of the argument is that need to know is logical. Because if everyone was told everything they thought they deserved to know, pretty soon there would be no secrets. So mathematically speaking, the CIA had to happen. They were created to be the owners of information. In the 1950s and 1960s, that's one thing. The moderately abusive power they had then was bad enough, even though at the time they could do much less with it. But can you imagine how much power they acquired when the world approached the information age? Suddenly, computers and the internet came along. At that point, not only does the CIA know everything, but they also have the power not to tell you anything, whoever the fuck you are. E. Is it the CIA's place to be economical with the truth? John McAfee. With very few exceptions, the CIA will tell the President and Congress the truth. However, it's more a question of what truth the CIA wants to tell and when. Let's say the issue was gun control back before the era of information. If it was in the CIA's interest for people to be able to carry guns, they would have the power to control the information in the sense that if 100,000 people died 1 year because of guns and 50 people were saved because of them, they could choose only to talk about the little grandma in North Dakota who shot the intruder who was trying to break into her home, and not the 100,000 others who were shot in all kinds of other hideous circumstances. And then when you extend that information set into all other areas, finance, business, international relations, politics, history, political alliances, etc., they have total command over more information than any one president could ever learn. There are very few exceptions when the CIA doesn't have the upper hand. Me. What exceptions? John McAfee. As Iraq was gaining power in the Middle East, the CIA became unsettled because what was happening went against whatever it was that they wanted to achieve in that region at the time, in relation to God knows what. After one failed attempt to assassinate Saddam Hussein in the 90s, they realized that assassinating him would only make things worse. He had sons, brothers, relatives, and they knew they couldn't whack them all. Fast forward to 2003, and at that point, the CIA knew that the only way they could protect their interests in the region was to bomb Iraq. The CIA basically went to President Bush and said words to the effect of, "Mr. President, sir, please sit down because we have extraordinarily bad news. We know that Iraq has missiles capable of reaching the UK, our closest ally. But we now know with 100% certainty that Iraq has nuclear weapons." The CIA knew they didn't have these weapons. The general public and every other country in the world knew too. But the CIA talked seriously enough to President Bush that they knew he would have to act. He was always going to declare war. It's not common for them to lie to presidents, but with Iraq, they had no other way of protecting their own interests. They had to construct a case, and they did. It was a fucking tragedy. Me. How do you know all of this? Are you getting this information directly from CIA friends? John McAfee. I rarely discuss this kind of stuff, but lately I've had to because people just think I'm a fucking conspiracy theorist. But I know people in the CIA. One of them still emails me every other day and we physically talk once a week. This individual was a former station manager. He is now as retired as anyone ever is from the organization. The CIA, from a day-to-day perspective, does retire people theoretically. They have to when operatives reach 65, but they never really retire. They continue to get the same paycheck from a secret corporation funded by God knows what, rather than from the government. Same amount, same benefits, just a different entity doing the actual paying. So my friend, while technically retired, is still there, and while he is, he talks to me and informs me of anything that is pertinent to my situation. Beyond that, the CIA was one of my first customers when I started McAfee Associates, because I was basically the only computer security company in existence back in 1987. I know as much, if not more, than any politician about what goes on inside these covert agencies like the CIA, and for that reason I know exactly why they are looking for me, and over the years I've learned how to make quick moves when I'm in a corner. I'll keep doing that as long as I'm alive. Me. You've escaped from a few tight corners over the years. Where does this innate ability to understand the dynamics of a situation come from? Is it a natural ability or something you learned? John McAfee. Escaping tricky situations almost always comes down to timing. Timing. On the occasions in my life when I dealt drugs, for example, when I was traveling around Mexico with my girlfriend in the late 70s, I learned this. It was never anything serious, I was just earning a few extra bucks. Nevertheless, people would come to me all the time and ask me, "What happens when you finally get caught?" I always told them the same thing. You better have it settled within the first 20 seconds of the encounter, or else it's all over. Generally speaking, in these early moments, there's usually only one guy or maybe two. It's at that point that you've got to make a move of some kind. Take the one guy aside, whisper something in his ear, or offer cash. Do whatever, and do it quickly. I know of one instance of this couple who got caught dealing drugs and had no money to bribe anyone. The guy said, "Would you like my girl for a while instead?" They made a move not to be judged, by the way, because these were the days when they would have gone to jail for 30 years in Mexico for dealing drugs. I have no idea where I learned this ability to do something quickly. In fact, at times, I think it's more about perceiving the absolute reality of your situation. I've been in enough situations in my life to understand these realities. And in the Dominican Republic in 2018, when the soldiers came onto my boat before I'd even gone through customs or officially entered the country, I recognized the reality again. I'd been all over the world on boats and in every port that has access to the sea. I knew how the system works. When they came aboard without even letting me talk to customs, I thought, "Fuck me. Thank you, Cuba." It took me 4 days to get from Cuba to the Dominican Republic. Within 30 seconds of my boat leaving Cuba, the CIA probably knew exactly where I was going. From there, I just reacted to my reality as it unfolded. I had no idea I was going to have to fake illness and go to the hospital to buy time. These things just happened even after I was assigned lawyers. They played their hand, then I played mine. I just counted on myself to understand the realities as they presented themselves. And when I did, and it reached a point where I clearly understood what everyone was trying to achieve, I said to myself, "I can deal with this shit," and that's when I took action and faked a stroke. Over time, I have learned to read people, and dealing with my dad when I was growing up in Salem, Virginia, was where I learned.